You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Yeah, rolling along in the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. Hope you're enjoying your first day back. Hope you're attacking these next couple of weeks with vigor. You don't get a lot of time here, man. Christmas, like a couple of weeks. The holidays just kind of fly by, man. Like, it's hard to get any real work done. So hopefully you're just kind of pretending to do work today. You're listening to the show. You're invested in what's going on with the Seattle sports scene. Because right now, honestly, it feels like the biggest crossroads we've had in Seattle sports in, what, a decade? It just feels like one of those times where this thing could go in a couple different directions. And with, like, all of the teams in town. It's crossroads time. I don't know which crossroads song you prefer. Maybe you're a Cream guy. Maybe you like Eric Clapton, Ginger Baker, Jack Bruce. It's a pretty filthy riff, actually.
Speaking of super groups and super bands and super teams.
Never heard this song in my life.
Never heard Crossroads? It's a good blues song.
Man, Ginger Baker is the best jazz drummer.
You don't know this song?
I know Eric Clapton, but I don't know this one.
Eric Clapton's been in like 30 bands.
Yeah.
Nobody's been in more bands than Clapton, but that's Crossroads, or maybe you prefer this Crossroads. I mean, there's a couple of options here. Is this one more your style, more?
I know this one. Sure.
It's no Wheels of Fire, but fine.
It's no Thuggish Ruggish.
No. I remember this music video really well.
Super weird.
Is that the first time we've heard Morris sing on the show?
You tried to get me to before. This one finally.
It's Bone Thugs. That's the secret. Oh, we'll play plenty more. Unlocked. I get it. If that's what unlocks Morris singing
stuck
voice.
In your head. I'm going to be singing that the rest of the day.
Well, mic's open. So anytime you want to start singing, you just jump right in there. It feels like, honestly, the biggest crossroads we've had here in about a decade, maybe a little longer than that. I always tell this story when we talk about the formation of this station and starting 710 ESPN Seattle. You got to remember, and I'm sure you've heard me say this, but 2008 is the worst year, I think, any city has had in the history of sports. 2008 in Seattle is the worst year any city has ever had in the history of sports.
It's a bold statement.
Well, let's think about it for a moment.
Mariners.
The Mariners were the first team in history to spend $100 million and lose 100 games. The Seahawks went, I think it's 5-11, and let go of Mike Holmgren.
4-12?
I thought they were 5-11.
2008, 4-12.
All right. Well, even worse. I was giving them the benefit of the doubt. They went 4-12 with an aging roster and fired Mike Holmgren. The Huskies went 0-12. The Cougs went 2-10, beating the Huskies and some directional school. And the Sonics left. I don't know how you have a worse year as a city than that. Every franchise around was a disaster.
The Cougs are 2-11.
I'm sorry, they were 2-11.
It's been worse.
They played an extra game. Sorry, they were 2-11. Thanks for fact checking me on that. That's the important content we need. I mean, and by the way, the economy crashed. So, like, can you imagine that the powers that be here at Bonneville looked at that sports year, the economy, with the economy crashing and everything else that went on that year, and said, hey, let's start a sports station on AM. Good move. The fact that we're here is a legitimate miracle. It is a legitimate miracle. And much of it is due to a man named Dave Pridemore. Maybe you know him, maybe you don't. But what Dave did to step in and save this station from being shut down a year in is one of the true amazing stories that really is not that interesting to folks out there. But in our building, should be the stuff of legends. I mean, he laid down, risked getting fired in order to save this station, which almost didn't make it. Brock and Salk was not good. Calabro was the only name on the station. He was doing fine. It took a while for things to kind of come together. And you know, I'm thankful that Dave did that and everybody else who helped make this thing possible at 710. But think about where sports was at in Seattle in 2008. And then how things turned around. Right? Mariners ended up with a really good year in 2009. They didn't make the playoffs, obviously. But they had a good year. They kept people. Griffey came back. Mike Sweeney was here, right? That was the year they just kind of jacked. It was Jack Zarensic's first year, and things just kind of worked out. The Franklin Gutierrez three-way trade worked out, right? So there were like a few things that came together for the Mariners that year. It took another year for the Seahawks because the Jim Morris season was a disaster. But the next year, you got Pete Carroll, and that started to turn things around. The momentum, and Pete and John started shuffling through their roster, right? And then the Huskies ended up with Sark, who also wasn't good. But at least he invigorated the program, right? He had some level of life to him, which eventually led to the Chris Peterson era and coming off the disaster of where the Huskies had been in their previous couple of coaching jobs, right? It took a little longer for the Cougs. I'll admit that. And that took a little bit longer because Paul Wolf was just kind of a dud. But eventually you get Mike Leach. And the next thing you know, Seattle sports are kind of humming here. Right, the Seahawks are go to the Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl, and the Mariners, while they you know kind of went up and down, they were relevant, I think, during that time. The Huskies obviously became significantly more relevant. The Cougs ended up becoming more relevant under Mike Leach. We get the Kraken. Things feel great in Seattle sports. Where are you at today? It feels like a crossroads moment. Don't go down to the same depths that we were at in 2008. Don't let it happen. The Mariners are on the verge of doing something great. Don't get jumped by everybody around you. That's why Mariners fans are so desperate right now. Yeah, it's the long, you know, the long playoff list streak. Yes, it's the fact that you've been promised that you're going to go good to great. You've been promised that they'll spend money. You bought in to the entirety of this rebuild, and now it's time for it to pay off. If you're a Mariners fan right now, Justin, aren't you desperate?
Yes, they gave me an inch. I want a mile.
Well, and not just because you want the mile. They promised you the mile.
That's what I'm saying. They said the checkbook was opening. I want all of it.
You were promised a mile.
Yeah.
I want it. I understand every Mariner fan in Seattle saying that today. Hey, I dealt with it. I understood you were going to take down payroll with the expectation that it's going to come back. I understood you were going to trade away some of the veteran players to bring up young ones with the expectation that when they're ready, you're going to add to it and really go big. We were told it then. We were told it to start this offseason. It hasn't happened yet. Doesn't mean it's not going to happen. Today's a huge day. Got to see what the Mariners do today. Got to see whether they're able to add. Got to see whether they're able to bring in the right pieces to complement this roster. Not to build the Texas Rangers roster. To build this roster. And complement this roster and this team. So that is at a crossroads moment right now. Are you going to pay off the last 4 years of fan expectation? Are the Seahawks going to be able to keep this thing together? They're not a good team, man. They're a bad team right now. They're a bad team right now. We went through this. The only teams with a worse record than the Seahawks are the dregs of the league. Not just this year, but every year. Jacksonville, the Jets, the Texans, Detroit. I think they're the only four teams with a worse record than the Seahawks, right? We go through this the other day. Those teams are the laughingstock of not just the NFL sports. Those are bad franchises. You're not a bad franchise. But do you want to be reduced back to where we were in 2008? Coming off a Holmgren, who's going to be his successor? It's going to be Jim Mora. That doesn't work. Quarterback, who at that point, and I love Matt, was nearing the end of his time here. That was a bad moment for the Seahawks. You're hanging on desperately to a previous era with Matt Hasselbeck and John Carlson and Lofa Tatupu and some of those guys that was over. But they just didn't realize it yet, and it took another year before finally there was recognition that that era had ended and it was time for the next one. Jody Allen right now is in a really interesting spot of trying to figure out where this era goes next. Is there more meat left on the bone with Pete? Is there more meat left on the bone with Russ? Is there more meat left on the bone with John Schneider? Those are the three biggest names in the organization. And right now, there's a lot of finger pointing, not necessarily between them to each other, but with their camps and in the media. There's a lot of conversation, understandable, by the way, about who's to blame for the fact that they're not in competition for being one of the better teams in the league. We're talking about them maybe sneaking back into a seventh playoff spot as a team without a winning record. We're not talking about them winning Super Bowls with one of the best quarterbacks of his era. That's a problem. So which direction does that go? Does it go towards, hey, let's make some real legitimate changes, get this thing figured out and move forward? Or does it head towards that end of the Mike Holmgren era, not sure kind of what we want to do next place? Right? Crossroads for the Seahawks. Crossroads for the Huskies. We just talked about them a few minutes ago. Who's going to be your next head coach? The head coach in college football is the second most important position in all of sports.
Behind
head coach of a college basketball team.
Oh, I did not expect
head coach of a college basketball team is everything. I mean, like, because the team is so small and you're doing the recruit, like, to me, if you don't have a head coach, okay, you're like, forget it.
Sure.
You just don't have a chance. But it's almost the same thing in college football. It's more important even, I think, than quarterback of an NFL team. You affect every single ounce of what happens at your college in that department, in your team. You are the GM, you are the president, you are the vocal, spokesperson, you are the in-game coach, you are the system, you are everything.
The G said the CEO.
Yeah, but it's almost even bigger than that. Like, you're the CEO and the COO, because you're not only doing the big picture stuff, you're also doing the operating.
Yeah, the marketing.
Right? I mean, like, you are everything, and the recruiting, and it's all about you and whether or not you bring in the right people around you. I mean, like, you set that whole culture, and you coach during the week, and you choose the grocer. You have to do it all. So UW's at a crossroads. Jimmy Lake embarrassed this school. I don't know how else to say it. He left UW a worse place than he found it. It was not that long ago. What was it? 5 years ago? 4 years ago? That you were playing in the Peach Bowl
17.
Against Alabama with an opportunity to maybe advance in the national title game? And here you are coming off of a disastrous year, a blowout loss to your rival cross state who planted their flag at the 50-yard line of your field. And you're out there talking about, like, the coach from Fresno State? Crossroads time, man. Especially as USC is trying to make the Pac-12 better. If USC has Lincoln Riley and the Oregon Ducks have the money that they've got, where are you? I understand when you're saying, all right, it's the third best program on the West Coast. Okay. But that insinuates that you're right in the conversation with the top two, right? Hey, what are the best programs on the West Coast? Well, it's USC, Oregon, Washington, and then kind of the next tier. Okay. You're the third best program, third biggest name, but still in the first tier.
Sure, so prove it.
If your options are like, hey, we're getting the guy from Fresno State, you might still be the third best program on the West Coast, but you're a lot closer to the second tier than the first. In fact, you might be in it. You might be the top school in the second tier. That's a big difference from being the third school in the top tier. So crossroads moment, man, for Jen Cohen, for everybody associated with UW Athletics, for the boosters, for the fans. Does a big-name coach want to come to Washington? Everybody's a part of that, Jen Cohen and the money they've got here. But the Adidas deal is obviously a big factor. And the fan base, the facilities, all of those things, they all factor in together. Crossroads moment for UW. So when I say that right now feels like it could go in any direction with all three of those teams, I really mean it. Can you believe the importance, right? I mean, like, if the Seahawks lose tonight, what, 3-8?
God, I don't want to go back to 0-8.
Is that a real number? 3-8? 3-8 and a loss on the road to the Washington football team? God, have some pride, have some dignity. Don't let that happen. Right? Yeah. Have some pride. Have some dignity. Don't lose on the road to the Washington football team on Monday night. Tyler Heinicke? Come on.
Taylor.
Same thing. Really?
That's the point.
It's Taylor? I thought it was Tyler. You're sure about that? I think you're just messing with me. It can't be true. Can't be.
I could give my season tickets away at 08. I don't want to go back to those.
Can I ask a question before we tell you everything you need to know in a minute? Let me just make this clear. How long did you produce for John Clayton Moore? Like 5 years you were there working with John? Tyler Heinicke, you immediately jump on me, but John gets to say like whatever the heck he wants to every name under the sun.
Well, we had some repeats. Like it was TJ Lockett for a while, and I just gave up after a while. Everyone knows he knows Tyler Lockett. You know? I think he was thinking TJ Duckett. So,
but everyone knows I know whatever it is Heinicke, don't they? Isn't that fair? Doesn't everybody know that? It's 7:15. It's time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Sing some more Bone Thugs for us, Maura. That's what we need.
See you at the crossroads.
That was pretty good. She just got to do it with confidence. You have a kind of a pretty voice.
She looks away from the mic as she does it.
I know. That was a very timid singing. You kind of have a pretty voice. I want to hear more of
it. We'll work on it. We'll get back.
All right, Justin, go work on that. I'll tell you that the Mariners are at least on the board. Over the weekend, they dealt a couple of minor leaguers for second baseman. Adam Frazier had been an all-star last year in Pittsburgh, dealt to San Diego at the deadline. Now he's headed here for the final year of his before he gets to free agency. Frazier, he does have a few qualities the Mariners covet and need. First off, he can hit. .281 career average. That would have been second on the Mariners last year. Got an on-base percentage of .344 for his career. That would have been third. So look, he can play multiple positions, something Jerry has stated is very important to them. And as a left-handed bat, you could see him platoon a little bit and really helps him with some of the handedness issues they had at times last year. But most of all, he's a good player that doesn't stop them from getting busier today.
You know, and frankly, as we sit here and work our way through the free agent market for the potential for trade, you know, we felt like adding Adam made us a deeper team without stopping us from doing anything else we would have wanted to do, which is that's double the fun.
Yeah, I like this deal. I'll just be clear about it. I like what the Mariners did with Adam Frazier. There's not much to dislike, but they need to do more, and today's the day to do it. We saw the biggest potential name on their rumor list sign in the division with Texas. Rangers agreeing with Marcus Semien on a 7-year deal for $25 million a year. Other names that came off the board this weekend, Mark Canha, Starling Marte both go to the Mets. Kevin Gausman to Toronto, Avisail Garcia to Miami, Corey Kluber to Tampa. Sounds like Max Scherzer is going to go to the Mets. So yeah, things are busy, and while the Mariners are making calls, and I know they're busy, I know they're in on multiple targets that are on their board, I know they expect much more to come, hopefully as soon as today, but I do understand the lack of trust and patience right now from a fan base that dealt with the rebuild, that bought into what this franchise did and has now been promised results and expects to see them. So I've heard that they need to acquire much of what they need through the trade market. We'll see if that's true. A couple of names that I'll be watching, Trevor Story and Michael Conforto. I don't know what they're planning to do in terms of pitching, but I've always kind of expected that to come more through trades than free agency. And I also want to pay attention to where the A's go because they haven't started dealing any of their players yet. I think the Mariners could be a match for Matt Chapman and or some of the starting pitchers there. The league expected to lock out Wednesday night, so you got to get these deals done soon, likely as soon as today.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, congratulations to all of the Cougs out there and everyone who roots for Washington State. A 27-point win sets their Apple Cup record, and for it to come after all the challenges this year, it just proved a testament to their players, their structure, and now permanent head coach Jake Dickard. What a ride it's been for him. Second year as defensive coordinator in Pullman, Nick Rolovich was let go, of course, along with half the staff. And since taking the job, the team is 3-2. They're bowl eligible. They're victorious in the Apple Cup for the first time in 9 years. And they were on the verge of playing for the Pac-12 title before Oregon beat Oregon State on Saturday. So yeah, congratulations to him. I do think that there's a realistic concern that Wazoo's putting too much stock into five games and maybe even more specifically to what happened this past weekend. But let's look at the reality. It's a quirky job. He's a personable representative of the school. That's important. But most importantly, he's shown the ability to lead and did it through chaos. That's why he got this job. And that's why I think he can have success. He's a leader. As for Washington, plenty of rumors. They will name their next coach as soon as today, as late as tomorrow. The two names most heavily linked seem to be Iowa State head man Matt Campbell and Fresno State coach Kalen DeBoer. But after USC landed Lincoln Riley, the pressure is certainly on to keep pace. And if UW really is the third best job west of the Rockies, This is the time to prove it. Neither option's got Riley's name recognition at all, but Campbell at least has some juice after turning around a longtime loser in Ames, Iowa. So if you want to tell people to bow down, this is when you earn it. No position more important than college coach, and that includes NFL quarterback. So a huge, huge day here for the UW program.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Seahawks got to go 7-0 to do it. You got to start with a win tonight. They'll get that chance in the nation's capital. Won't be easy. Injuries mounting, especially as it relates to the running game. Rashad Penny, Travis Homer, both out. Alex Collins, limited. Likely to see practice squad running back Josh Johnson elevated. He could even see some carries along with Collins, of course, and DJ Dallas. So big time issues in the running game. And then the offensive line, Damian Lewis is going to miss this game, as will his backup guard, Jamarco Jones. Real questions here, though, start with the biggest names. What are we going to see from Russ on national TV? What are we going to see from him? He's been inaccurate. He's been tentative. Will we see that for a third straight game, or will we get the real Russell Wilson back? What style of ball does this team want to play? Here we are more than halfway through the season. I still don't think we understand what their offensive philosophy really is in practice, even if we've heard some of what it is on paper. So a win can put them back within a win of a playoff spot, thanks to just awful mediocrity in the NFC. The Vikings lost to San Francisco this week. Saints lose to Buffalo. Eagles fall to New York. So the seventh spot right now is a 5-6 record. The Seahawks could get to 4-7 with a win tonight. Amazing. Kraken get a split in Florida thanks to a nice 4-1 win over the Panthers. They're actually playing their best hockey of the year. Got two goals from Jordan Eberle. They'll be in Buffalo this afternoon. That's everything you need to know. We do that quarter past every hour.
This game tonight, Seahawks-Washington football team is, I mean, they're at 4-6, Seahawks 3-7. Is this jockeying for that last position, I just realized?
Well, it doesn't get you to the last position.
No.
It puts you in position to get to the last position.
My point is, with the Washington football team.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of low-life franchises that are above you right now. I mean, like, that's kind of the spot we've gotten to. I mean, I told you, the only teams with a worse record are the jokes of the league.
Ugh.
Right? I mean, that's the company you keep right now. Can you dig yourself out of it? I appreciate Russ and Pete talking about trying to go 7-0 here over the course of the rest of the season. I appreciate that. I like what they're talking about. I think that's absolutely the way you've got to talk about it. But yeah, we've kind of heard this talk over the last few weeks, right? It's not new. Oh, well, when they get Russ back, and when they do this, and when they do that, well, all those things have kind of happened. So, look, the Seahawks and Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll have done so much to earn our trust over the course of the last decade that until they're eliminated, I'll still believe they have a chance.
Yeah.
I mean, whereas folks are ripping the Mariners because they don't have that built up trust level. I understand.
There's patience.
That. The opposite is true. See, with the Seahawks, Pete and Russ should have so much built in trust based on what they've done here over the course of the last decade. But that doesn't necessarily mean that 7-0 is a realistic possibility down the stretch for a team that has not played well this year. That's the issue. They just haven't played well. They haven't looked like the Seahawks. They look confused. They don't look like they know who they want to be. And Russell hasn't looked like Russell even before he hurt his finger. So until all those things come together, it's hard to predict that the Seahawks are going to be the Seahawks. So we'll watch tonight, man. This is your chance to kind of jump back into it, as crazy as that sounds. With a win, all of a sudden things start to look a little bit better. Maybe you can stack one on top of another. The Rams are fading. The Cardinals aren't necessarily a world beater. I mean, like, there are teams that are out there to be beat. The Niners. Like, you have games that you should win on your schedule against Texas, right? I mean, you should beat Washington. You should beat Chicago. So there are winnable games out there still for the Seahawks. But it starts with taking care of business and doing that tonight. All right. Hey, there was a decision made over the weekend that probably there are some folks ripping, and I think they're making a big-time mistake. Want to talk about that and move forward next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
All right, let's go. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN, Seattle, 710sports.com. You get the cameras fixed? We're good?
We are good.
Very good. Got to have the cameras fixed.
Taylor.
How fat do I look, man, coming off of Thanksgiving, the caloric intake I've had?
How quickly do you think weight shows up?
Yeah, really, you are concerned that it's just pounded on
pretty
that
quick.
2 days?
Oh, yeah, because it's, you know why? because it's not just like the caloric weight. It's the salt and like the amount like the of bloating. Puffiness and bloating okay. that gotcha. Goes with it. Oh, yeah. Dude, I bet you I didn't weigh myself. I wouldn't be surprised if I gained 7 or 8 pounds over the course of the last week.
What?
Yeah, dude, I put it away and I'm such a pig about it, too. Like, the problem is then I start snacking. I'm like, oh, you know what we need? We need cheese. And then we need a baguette for the cheese. And we need crackers for the cheese. Then I better drink some wine with the cheese. Yeah. Hey, now I need a little something sweet after that. Don't we have some brownies around here somewhere? Some Oreos? And the next thing you know, like, I'll just go one right after another. And then, hey, food was good. I'm going to have seconds. You know what? Maybe I'll get thirds because there's a little bit left on that plate. And I'm a clean plate guy. So now I've cleaned my plate again. Dude, I can get fat quick. So
and also, not to derail you here, but my Montana is not a healthy place. Cheese curds and everything there was the same way.
Dude, you had cheese curds?
Oh, we had cheese curds.
Oh, let's talk a little bit about that. Yeah. Tell me a little bit. Hold on. We're going to talk off the air about these cheese
curds. I brought some home. So,
I can't eat them now. See, now I have to pay the price for what I did over the course of the last week or so. I've got to, I got a green smoothie diet this thing here.
All right.
Try to make myself look good again or, you know. Better look anyway. Good. Look gooder from gooder. Where it is right now. It is a good thing though. We have our video stream working again, which means I don't know if you guys follow this. If you follow me on Twitter at the Mike Salk, I hate that that's my Twitter handle, but it's all I could get. I tweet out generally these like what are they a minute to 2 minute clips from the show. It's a good way of kind of getting like some of the most relevant content from the show every day. You can get it through my Twitter feed. I tweet them out. Or you can get it through our YouTube thing, right?
Yep, YouTube and the 710 ESPN Seattle Instagram as well.
All right, so if you subscribe on YouTube or on Instagram, you can see it that way. Or you can follow me at the Mike Salk. I generally tweet them out throughout the day. Just so you can see some of like the short clips that are most interesting on any day. I don't know if this will make it or not.
I was going to say, I'm mostly bummed out we didn't have a video of Maura singing because that would have been a hit. A
huge hit.
No.
It'll happen again. Now that the video is
no,
working.
It won't.
What do you mean, no, it won't?
She's aware of it.
What, you have to have some dedication to this show. We'll have to do another Getting to Know Maura, but it'll secretly just be like a musical version of it. I don't know if this take will make it into our clips of the day, but I am glad they started Sam Heward. I know it didn't work out. I know he didn't prove himself to be the player that he's rumored to be. But he also didn't do anything to disprove that. I think Sam was put into a really difficult situation. I watched that whole game on Friday. He was put into a bad situation with a team that is in complete shambles. And no, he was not able to overcome it. But I don't think that's a shot about his future. I think that speaks to where he's at right now. But that's not a shot at where he's going to be. At the end of his freshman year, this program was stable. I think you see a completely different version of Sam Heward on Friday than what we saw. But where he's at, and by the way, the senior version of Sam Heward, what he's going to be in 4 more years, could that player be able to overcome some of the other difficulties around him? Maybe. But I think the combination of seeing the freshman version of Sam Heward with the complete mess that is going on around him.
Yeah, driving a car with 3 flat tires.
I don't think he's good enough yet to overcome any of that. So I don't have any negative feelings about Sam. It didn't prove to me that he's the guy. How could it? He didn't play like the guy. I think he would admit that. But it didn't prove to me that he's not. And any Husky fans, and I've seen some of this online, which I shouldn't even look at because, again, it's an insane place to look for how sports fans feel. I hope that's just a small minority opinion of people saying, oh, look, Sam didn't look good. This guy's terrible. We're banking on this and there's nothing there. I didn't see that at all. I love the confidence that he had to just keep chucking. Wasn't wild about the accuracy. Wasn't wild about some of the decision making. But honestly, I think those things will develop a little bit. And I think he would need the right system and the right coaches to make this whole thing work. Now, he can leave as a redshirt. He can transfer now without even missing a year. So to say this coaching hire is important, it's an understatement. It's arguably more important than anything the Seahawks decide to do because coaches in college mean everything. We were talking about that earlier. So, yeah, not just because of Sam. It's not just important because of the future for Sam Heward. But, look, that's one of the better prospects and better young players in college football, right? So what are you going to do to put the right pieces around him and the right system around him to try to win here for the next 4 years?
That's got to factor into Cohen's decision, right?
I would think it's a part of it. I mean, obviously, and look, we'll talk to Brock, his uncle, coming up in 10 minutes. Obviously, the Hewards are pretty well connected and respected in the UW community. But I think finding the best way for Sam to be in good position to win would absolutely behoove Jen and the rest of that program. And I liked what I saw. I know he didn't play all that well. I didn't see anything that showed me that Sam doesn't have it. I want to also pass along this news. I told you we're kind of following everything. This is just a rumor. It's nothing yet. John Morosi, who has been on top of everything, and of course you hear him every week on with our afternoon show with Bob and Dave, says the Mariners and Phillies are among the teams I've heard linked to Chris Bryant in the last several days. So, again, these are just rumors. I know Mariners fans aren't going to be content until they actually see deals done instead of hearing them linked. But it does start that way. If you follow Morosi's timeline and, like, follow the Kevin Gausman thing, it's like the Blue Jays are very interested in Kevin Gausman. A couple hours later, momentum building towards Gausman and the Blue Jays. And then you hear, like, Giants also have some interest in Gausman. This thing's not done yet. Blue Jays and Gausman, almost done. And then finally, you know, Jeff Passan or Morosi or somebody step in and be like, it's done. They got a deal done. So the way this works, you've got to almost have to hear generally some of this first. Now, the fear for Mariners fans is that you're being used as leverage. That's the fear, that every time your name is out there, you're just being used as leverage, right? Because it all comes back to the real fear, the deep-rooted fear that you bought into this rebuild and it's not going to pay off because they're not going to get it done for you. Totally understand the fear. We all should be holding the Mariners accountable based on the trust we put in them 4 years ago. We trusted them to do something difficult that would be painful for us to watch with the understanding that they would deliver at the end of all
that.
Go
shopping.
They've delivered on step one. They've completely rebuilt, renovated, and redone their entire farm system. It's the best, and it's the envy of the league. They've started to deliver on part two, which is that core has started to come up, and they've competed and made it interesting all the way to the last days of the season. But the next part of delivering on that promise, and it's arguably the biggest part, is winning. And putting together a roster and spending the money that you saved over the course of the last few years back into the roster for this year. So now's the time. Let's go. So when I hear the Mariners and Phillies among the teams linked to Chris Bryant, I'm not surprised. They should be linked to Chris Bryant. And they should get him. Or they should get Trevor Story. Or they should get Marcus Stroman. Or heck, they should get a few of those guys. Because I don't really care how much money they spend.
Yeah.
Let's go.
We've been shopping at Gap in Old Navy for a while. Let's go down Rodeo Drive. Start of window shopping. Start of watching everybody else do it.
Just as long as you're not driving down Rodeo like Rage Against the Machine was back in the day.
I would also like to be driving down Rodeo.
All right, coming up next, we'll talk to Brock. What was it like for him to watch Sam Huard? Who's going to be the next coach at UW? Got a lot of questions for Brock. We're going to try to get to all of them next.
Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30.
Brought to you by Precor Home Fitness.
On the Mike Salk Show.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
All right, Brock, I want to get right into it. We got so many things to do today with just kind of a crazy, crazy time here in Seattle sports. I'll start with you, though. What was it like watching Sam on Friday? Your uncle playing college football, getting the start for the Huskies. I know it obviously didn't go the way everyone wanted it to, but what was that like for you?
Yeah, a little bit surreal, not going to lie. A little surreal watching that. Where was I? What day was that? Friday?
Friday.
So I was at the airport. Yeah, I was at the airport in Salt Lake City. Thankfully, I had a couple hours there to watch it. And yeah, pounding the bar stool a little bit and a little frustrated at times, screaming at the TV, why are you running the same stupid defensive front you ran against the air raid? This isn't the air raid. You don't just line up. Nobody's done that to them this year. Get after them. And they just were so passive and Delora was awesome, but they let him be awesome. And so I was super, yeah, I was pretty wound up. Most of my crew left me alone watching in my own place. So, and I was bummed for Sam. There were a couple that were just can't haves, and he knows that. And yet, you know, those are learning lessons that unfortunately sometimes experience is the greatest teacher of them all. So I was frustrated. I was proud that he kept slinging it. I'm glad they didn't bench him or pull him. I was super proud that he didn't flinch and kept giving his guys some chances and pushing the ball down the field and, you know, doing some of the things that he can do. And he can throw it, man. He can really rip it. And those guys had a hard time catching it at times. It was kind of a whole mixture of some rage, some surrealness, and just some, you know, just proud of him battling, because that's a brutal spot to be in.
Who are they going to hire?
It is either going to be DeBoer or Campbell, and I have heard from both sides of the spectrum. I've heard Campbell at first, and then it was all DeBoer, 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 and then I've heard from some people that it's Campbell. And I think if we learned something from Lincoln Riley and then some of these different deals, that it does go down like that, that you can go back and forth, and all of a sudden one of those two men sleep on it tonight, and maybe it's Campbell and his family. They've got to figure out, you know, do we want to do this? You know, do we want to move from Ames, Iowa to Seattle, Washington? Are we all really in on this? And take in all that information, and maybe it's a no, and then maybe it's a yes, and it goes back and forth. I think DeBoer is probably, I hate to say, the fallback option, because that paints him in such a negative light, because football people respect him. And I think I texted you this last night. A couple of Notre Dame coaches, unprovoked, came up to me before the game on the field and just said, "Hey, man." So obviously they're hearing and knew that he interviewed, and just said, "If your alma mater gets Kalen DeBoer, he won't be the name. He's not like this big sex appeal, but that dude knows football and can absolutely coach it, and does a fantastic job of putting guys in the position for success." Something obviously the staff did not do.
But don't you need to? I mean, if you're the Huskies and they're one of the best programs on the West Coast, and top 25 school, and all that, don't you hire a guy like DeBoer once he's had success at Colorado, not once he's had success at Fresno State?
Did he hire Chris Peterson after he had success at Boise State? Did he have to go to USC?
Unique example, because of how long and how successful he was.
Do you
and the
need
number
to,
of
I know,
national
I know the point.
Big wins he
Do
got.
Do you need to sign the name? Or do you, or can you play the upside? Do you need to sign Marcus Semien?
Totally
or can
different
you play
situation.
Adam Frazier.
Totally different situation. You know it's a different situation because you taught me it's a different situation. College football is about perception and reality, man.
Yeah.
And
yes.
The perception is, if you can only get Kalen DeBoer, that you're not USC, you're not Oregon, and not just that you're not them, because you already knew that, you're not close.
Yep.
You're not close to them. If they're signing
Lincoln
Riley,
and you're
signing the guy from Fresno who didn't even win the Mountain West this year,
that is the bump that Chris Peterson got you when he came to Washington. Scott Woodward was able to get Chris Peterson. Oh my gosh, right? And the guy that had won and beaten Oklahoma, and then all of a sudden, there is a huge bump in perception and reality, and I'm not going to step back from any of that. I think that's totally true.
It was fairly risk free. That's what Lincoln Riley said. There's risk in everything in the world, but you've mitigated as much risk as you could with Chris Peterson.
Well, you sell. College football is a sales business. It is selling to high school coaches. It is selling to parents. It is selling to recruits. It's selling to alumni. It's selling to boosters. It's selling to athletic departments. It's selling in the ticket office. That is what big time college football is. And that is why USC went all in and was able to, and I think it was a smart move, frankly, for Lincoln Riley before Oklahoma goes to the SEC. I think that made a lot of sense. And yes, if you're able to sell Matt Campbell, who has been a wanted commodity in much the same vein as Chris Peterson, and Chris loves him, respects him a ton, I think would be one of his favorites. And we know that Chris is playing a huge role in this hiring process. And if he can convince Matt Campbell to make that move as well, yes, from a sales standpoint, Mike, it is a very different pitch.
What about Dickert? Quickly, I want to ask you about the Seahawks, obviously, but what about the Dickert hire? What did you make of that?
He forced Pat Chun's hand. Sorry.
Sure did.
You can't go and interview anybody else, even if you wanted to, even if you did talk to DeBoer and talk to Joe Moorhead and talk to others. Sorry. you know what? We're going to play so well that I'm going to make this decision for you. I'm going to so infuse this locker room with confidence. And yeah, it's going to be a rebuild and there's going to be a ton of dudes on the O-line and defense and everybody in the front leaves. Like, this was a time to win. And they certainly did down the stretch and gave themselves a, you know, put themselves in position to win the North that the Beavers done their job. So in a rebuild situation, I think Pat Chun wanted somebody with head coaching experience, but ultimately, Dickard said, yep, you can want that, but what you need is me and what I've shown what I'm capable of the last 2 months, hire me. And they did.
Seahawks going to be able to beat Washington tonight? Like, I am.
They play tonight?
Horribly nervous about this game tonight. Yeah. Yes. I have a really, I mean, look, maybe it means nothing. I just don't have a good feeling about it. The way here's Washington's coming in playing, I don't know. Yep. Just, it doesn't.
Well, here's the one thing Washington does not do well. And this is the one thing, like, if they can't, man, if they can't create explosives tonight, and that is through run game and through movement and through play action first, Mike, if they can't create explosives tonight, we've got a real problem. Because this Washington defense, that's the one thing that they do give up. That's the one vulnerability they have on the back end of their defense. So this could be a Lockett and Metcalf get right. That's what the NFL has been this year, man. Every time you think you know it, Dallas, unbelievable. Got everybody. Nope. No, actually, they're going to lose a couple in a row. Raiders are done. Oh, they can't play. Oh, nope. They put together their best game. Buffalo, crown them, put them in the AFC championship. Nope. They go and get blown out. Like, just when you think you know this league, this season, as much as I can remember that, you really don't. So maybe you catch in Washington, it's instead of a desperate team at the absolute wrong time, hey, man, they feel great about themselves. Look at this. We got the Seahawks limping in here, and we're going to pound them. And maybe the Seahawks finally, with, you know, a little extra day and obviously some wounds that needed to be healed, maybe tonight is the night they get right.
I sure hope so, man, because the idea of them being 3-8,
well, how about yesterday just watching a ton of NFL and they put up all the graphics and all of the teams that are alive in both sides? It was with the extra wild card. And you see the graphic of the NFC. I think the only team not on it,
Detroit.
One or two teams, was just Seattle Detroit. And Detroit.
Yeah. Well,
no, you weren't even on it with four.
Oh, they didn't
make
it on there.
The other teams had four wins. No.
Oh, you had to get to four.
Yeah, you got to get to four to get on the graphic. You got to get to four to put yourself on the graphic and at least be within earshot. Gosh, so.
Brock, it really does feel like crossroads time right now in Seattle. I was saying this earlier, for all of these teams, like the Mariners have taken our trust for the last few years, and now they're at a crossroads. The Huskies are at a huge crossroads of their future. The Seahawks, God knows what happens with the rest of this year, and then Jody and the decision she's got to make this offseason.
Yeah.
We're at a crossroads.
No,
right
we
now,
are. Man. And it's not even necessarily like years ago when we started the station where everybody was horrible and you got to build it up and, oh my gosh, it's bad.
That's what
I
was talking about earlier.
Right? I mean, it was so bad. It was so bad then. That's not.
There it is.
A little Bone Thugs and Harmony. Are you serious?
Brock knows who this is.
Was this my first date with Molly?
Was it?
When I was in my Canadian tuxedo, walking up and knocking on the sorority. And we go and hit golf balls, which I bombed and felt great.
Yeah.
Didn't get any praise. And then we get in her old Honda Prelude with the N2 Hoops license plate.
Oh.
And she's playing some. Oh.
Well, so she drove you around on your first date.
Yeah.
I guess I never heard that part of the story. I've heard about the Canadian tuxedo and the golf
balls. I didn't have my car yet, Mike.
Right.
Okay? I hadn't thrown my touchdowns. I didn't get my Camaro and my Firebird, all right?
Wait, you had both?
I had to play a little bit.
Hold on, you had both a Camaro and a Firebird?
No.
What do you mean? Your Camaro and your Firebird?
I had the hand-me-down 83 T-Bird.
Right.
Eventually. Okay. But I didn't have it at that point.
Okay.
So we had Bone Thugs and Harmony.
So you just
right
made
there.
Up the whole Camaro and Firebird scenario.
Well, it was a throwback to Billy Joe who put the program on.
He had those things. Yes. You just made up that you had
them.
I got to
walk down memory lane.
Yeah.
I got to run here, man. We could do this. We'll do this, Wednesday. We'll be talking about this crossroads, I promise, on the Brock and Salk podcast. You can get it at brockandsalkpodcast.com. Brock, thank you. We'll talk tomorrow.
And go Hawks.
There you go. Every day with Brock, and we'll do it tomorrow coming off the Seahawks game as well. Gosh, we have barely talked about this Seahawks game for tonight, and Maura played me some sound. I mean, it's kind of gone out of it here over the last few days. This Pete Carroll sound, really, you got to hear, right? Because I think trying to figure out exactly what it means for the future of the Seahawks, this sounds about as important as it gets. I'll play it for you next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.